How are you?
I say welcome back.
Thank you.
You were here for that.
Saying it's really, really nice to be here. You know, it's nice to have a small yeshiva. You kind of get together, everybody's friends. You have a wonderful Rebbe. Sometimes big places are good too, but sometimes you can get lost in a big place. I'm sure here you can't get lost, right? If you get lost, someone's going to find you. Someone's going to look for you. So, Baruch Hashem. So I hope you're enjoying what you're doing. and growing and learning. And, you know, that's the most important thing, to learn Torah and do Hashem's mitzvahs and love every Jew and really love every person and care about them. And if you do that, you're going to make a Kaddish Baruch Hu very, very happy. So what I wanted to talk to you today about is a thought from a very, very famous Perush on the Torah. Have you heard of the Or HaChaim? Okay, so if you open up, if you ever get a Chumash with a lot of commentaries, so you'll have Rashi and Ramban and Ibn Ezra, etc. So one of the commentaries is Or HaChaim. And this was written by a great rabbi who lived in Morocco and then came to Eretz Yisrael. His name was Rav Chaim Ben Attar. In fact, the name Ben Attar is actually a well-known fashion designer, but actually it comes from that same family, but Ben Attar. And he was also a great Mekubal, a great Kabbalist as well. And in fact, he was so great that we actually call him Or HaChaim HaKadosh, the Or HaChaim, the Holy One, which we don't use for that many great people. And he's discussing the idea of Matan Torah. We know that when the Parsha of the Week is what? What's the Parsha of the Week this week?
Yitro.
Yitro, right. And a lot of things happen in Yitro. But what is the, I shouldn't say the most important thing, but I think I'm allowed to even say that. What's the most important thing that happens in Parshat Yitro?
Getting the Torah.
Yeah,
well, that's true also. Yeah, so you're right. We shouldn't rate things. But I think that in terms of the overall importance for the world and for the Jewish people, it's that's when Hashem gave us the Torah. Now, you understand, when we say Hashem gave us the Torah at Mount Sinai, it didn't happen all at once. What Hashem gave us at Mount Sinai, per se, were the Ten Commandments. And then, throughout the 40 years in the desert, Hashem was giving Moshe other commandments. So, we really didn't have a final Torah scroll with everything in it until 40 years later, right before Moshe died. You know what Moshe did the last day of his death? Well, first of all, what day did Moshe die? What day of the year? It's coming up. Close, you got the right month. Okay,
Gimel Adar?
Okay, so it's between Purim and Gimel Adar, yeah. So it is the month of Adar. It's the 7th of Adar. Right? Moshe Rabbeinu died on the 7th of Adar. And what day was he born?
The
7th of Adar, exactly, right? The great, great tzaddikim are born and die in the same day because they complete their year, exactly. So, you know what Moshe Rabbeinu did the last day of his life on the 7th of Adar? And how old was he when the day? 120, that's right. He wrote 13 Sifrei Torah. One Sefer Torah was kept in the Aron HaKodesh, the Holy Ark, in the Mishkan, in the Tabernacle. And each tribe was given their own Sefer Torah. So there are 12 tribes. Now, can you imagine how miraculous it is? You know how long it takes to write a sofer, to write one Sefer Torah? Yeah, how long does it take? At least a year, and you know, usually more than a year. Mm-hmm. Moshe Rabbeinu did 13 Sefer Torah in one day. That's really a supernatural miracle. Mm-hmm. Now, I'll ask you another question. Okay, we know Moshe Rabbeinu died. I'm digressing a little bit, but I'll go back to my main point. I don't want to forget my main point. But Moshe Rabbeinu died on the 7th of Adar. Okay, that we know. He was 120 years old. That we know. What day of the week did he die?
Shabbos.
That's a little trick. Yeah, we're saying.
Shabbos.
You got it. In fact, there were three great people who it is said they died on Shabbos afternoon. One was Moshe. One was Yosef, a tzaddik, and the other is David HaMelech. And that is why, okay, this is more of an advanced question, I don't know how well you know the Siddur of the Shabbos davening, but you know, on Shabbos Mincha, we daven Mincha on Shabbos, okay? So afterwards, we say a short thing about Tzidkas Chatzedek, that God's judgments are fair and good, and we accept them. And we actually have three verses in which we say, no matter how harsh God's judgment might be, we know it's true and we know it's righteous. This is called Siduk Hadin. That means you're justifying what God does. And there are three verses, because it is said, the reason that's given is that Shabbos Mincha, although Shabbos is a happy time, around Mincha we're a little sad, because that is when Yosef Moshe and David died. And that's why we accept Hashem's judgment with three verses. So, based on all this, I gave you a lot of data, a lot of information. Based on all this information, I want you to ask me a real good kasha.
How can Moshe have written the Torah on Shabbos?
Bingo! Wow! Great, great, great. You got it. You have to give him something extra. Right. What's going on here? You're telling me Moshe dies on Shabbos, and you're telling me Moshe wrote 13 Torah scrolls the day that he died. How can that be? You're not allowed to write on Shabbos. Everyone knows that. Moshe certainly knows you can't write on Shabbos. In fact, the Torah scroll might even be invalid if it was done through a sin of writing on Shabbos. So, Baruch Shekivanta, you actually came up with the same question that Tosfos asks in Maseches Menachos. You're probably not learning Gemara yet, so but if you look at when you learn Gemara, you know, pretty soon, you'll see that you have two main commentaries on Gemara. One is Rashi, just like on Chumash, Rashi has a commentary on Gemara, and then we have Tosfos, which are additional questions, mainly by Rashi's own grandchildren. And Tosfos asks your question, so it's a very, very good thing. So Tosfos gives a pretty interesting, amazing answer. Tosfos says, since Moshe couldn't have written it by a regular human way of writing, Moshe had to do it through a supernatural miracle. Tosfos says, any forbidden work that you do through a supernatural medium is not a prohibited melacha. So, if any of you want to go to Hogwarts or whatever the school in Harry Potter is, right? And you get, I'm not saying you're allowed to do that, but let's assume you get various magical skills. Now, of course, there are prohibitions in the Torah about magic. I'm not going to address kosher magic now. But in terms of Shabbos, that which you do through magic is not considered to be a forbidden malacha. That's what Tosfos says. Yeah.
A few minutes later, I just want to put in a...
Yeah.
Actually, they're very much into sleight of hand kind of magic.
Yes.
So now, I don't want to get off track.
Okay.
Later, maybe I might ask something about that.
Not yeah,
that.
Okay.
I can't sign up.
I don't want to get off track.
Can I just say this quick story?
Yeah.
It's just very quick.
Yeah.
Is that when I was younger, living in Baltimore, we went to see this magician, and he was told that if he wants, he was a Jewish magician, so if he wants to be able to perform, perform magic, then at the beginning of every show he has to say that this is not real magic, and then he can go into his act, because otherwise he might be inspired by dark magic, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know exactly. That's the story.
Yeah.
But pretty much every, like, yep. 2 minutes, every 2 minutes, he was like, this is not real magic. I just want everybody to know you might be enjoying yourself. You might think this is cool, but it's not. It's really awful. It's not real magic, but every trick, every single time. I got so mad.
Yeah, well, that's kind of what I would have said also, meaning the Torah doesn't prohibit fake things that are tricks. Rather, there is such a thing.
Yeah.
You know, you may say we don't believe it, but there is such a thing as real magic, where you connect to bad forces and negative forces. And the Torah says we don't want you to come in contact with those dark forces.
Mm-hmm.
But tricks, because I can move my hands quickly, you know, that's not me. That's just a... like anything else, that's just like a skill, and that's not really called magic. Magic is only real magic, which means, in other words, the implication is we believe there is indeed such a thing, and you're not supposed to touch it. Again, from Harry Potter, you see those differences in black, was it the black arts or whatever it would be. Okay, right. Okay, so very good. So Baruch Hashem, so we now have a new heter. It's about Malacha on Shabbos. Okay. Now, what I want to talk about, though, is this, the thought from the Or HaChaim. Let me read you a verse from the Chumash. I can use this too. Just the Kriyas HaTorah and Shavuos. Oh, yeah, is that a Chumash? That makes it even better.
Yisro,
right. Alrighty. Yeah. I hope I know where it is. The beginning of Perek Chaf. Okay. All right. Bachodesh Hashlishi. The third month. Now, which month is the third month?
Sivan.
Why? Because what's the first month?
Nisan.
I thought Tishrei is the first month.
I don't know.
Huh? How could Nisan be the first month?
Sivan.
Right. So really, this is a very funny thing. That in the Torah says Nisan, which is the month of Yetzias Mitzrayim, is the first month. So although the world may have been created in Tishrei, but for the Jewish people, Nisan is the beginning. And therefore, when it says the third month, it's Nisan, Iyar, Sivan. So the third month from the time they left Meretz Mitzrayim, Bayom Hazeh, on that very day, Ba'u Midbar Sinai, they came to Midbar Sinai. Midbar Sinai means not Mount Sinai, but it means the desert in front of Mount Sinai. Okay, good. So, when I read the Pasuk Aleph, I already know that where are the Jewish people? Rosh Chodesh Sivan, they're there in front of Mount Sinai, right? How many days, now again, just keep the chronology. So they got to Mount Sinai, Rosh Chodesh Sivan. When did Hashem give them the Ten Commandments? When was the Matan Torah? Okay, Rosh Chodesh, remember, is the first day of the month. When did they get the Torah? They got the Torah on a day that we later made a holiday because of that. The holiday is called Shavuos, right? What day is Shavuos? It's the sixth of Sivan. Okay? So, the Jewish people kind of spent 5 days of preparation getting the Torah on the sixth day. According to another opinion, they actually got the Torah on the seventh day, but that's very difficult because we start Shavuos on the sixth day. So without reconciling it, let's just go with the simplest opinion, that we heard the Ten Commandments on the sixth day, but we got to Sinai at Rosh Chodesh. Okay. Now, it then seems to go backwards. We already know they're at Mount Sinai. Pasuk Beis then says, Vayisu Mirfidim. They left. In other words, the stop before Sinai, they left the oasis called Rephidim, the Avo Midbar Sinai, and they came to the Sinai Desert. But we already know they came to the Sinai Desert. Like, why are you repeating that? And then it says, Yachanu Bamidbar, they encamped in the desert. Again, that seems to be superfluous. If they came to a place, that's where they were. And then it repeats, Vayichan Sham Yisrael. Yisrael, the nation Israel, encamped there, Neged Ahor, next to the mountains. So the basic problem the Or HaChaim has is that this whole second pasuk seems to be not telling me anything new. I already know from last week's Parsha that the stop before Sinai was in Rephidim. I know that. I mean, I know that. I don't need to be told they left Rephidim. By the way, extra credits. Do you remember, did you notice, did you study or learn on your own what big event happened in Rephidim, the oasis of Rephidim? That's so much to remember. This was a very unpleasant group of people who were the Amalek. First people. Yeah, you got it. You said you're going to say Amalek too? Amalek. Amalek was the very first nation that attacked us when we left Egypt. The very first. And Hashem commanded, we have to remember what they did to us and then eradicate their memory.
That was in Rephidim?
That was in Rephidim. The stop before Sinai, right? The stop before Sinai is Amalek. And remember Rashi says, Amalek, when the Jews left Egypt, they were like a boiling hot bath. Everybody was scared. If you have a boiling hot bath, nobody's gonna put their foot in it. They're going to get burnt. Amalek jumped into the bath. Now what happens if you jump into a boiling hot bath? You get burnt. But you know what happens? Scientifically, this is true. You've cooled it off so the next person could go in. Do you understand the danger of what Amalek did? The whole world was afraid to touch the Jewish people. The Jewish people had destroyed Egypt. or Hashem had destroyed Egypt on their behalf. 10 Makos, the splitting of the Red Sea. The Jewish people were like invulnerable. They were invincible. Amalek broke that fear. Amalek attacked. Now they got burnt, but they made the bath not so hot for other people. Other people could now think, I'm okay. Amalek got burnt, but they tried, so we can win next time. That happened to be in Rephidim. Okay. So, but the point is, I know they were in Rephidim, and Pasuk Aleph says they came to Midbar Sinai. So what's the purpose of Pasuk Beis? They traveled from Rephidim, they came to Midbar Sinai. So, here's what the Or HaChaim says. The Or HaChaim says that this second Pasuk is not referring to their physical journey. The first Pasuk describes their physical journey. We know from Parshas B'Shalach, they left Rephidim. And we know from Pasuk Aleph, they came to Midbar Sinai. I know that, geographically. But the second Pasuk is talking about a spiritual journey. That in order for a person to receive Hashem's Torah, there are certain steps a person has to take. And these steps are going to be alluded to in this Pasuk. And this is very relevant because it's not only steps that had to be taken by the Jews then, but they're steps that we have to take now. Because you know, receiving Hashem's Torah is not only a one-time thing. Every single day, we try to re-accept Hashem's Torah. We say in the Shema, right? All you guys say Shema in the morning? And at night also? So we say that b'chol yom b'yom, in every single day, the words of Torah have to be new to you. They shouldn't be like old or boring. They should be new and vibrant. So the Or HaChaim identifies the four steps. So I'm going to now subdivide the pasuk and show you how the Or HaChaim identifies each of these things as a step. Step one, vayisu mirfidim. You must leave the place called Rephidim. Now, what is Rephidim? I was never even in Rephidim. I even live in Israel. I wasn't in Rephidim, and you guys certainly were not in Rephidim. So here's what the Or HaChaim says. Rephidim, in addition to being a place, is also a contraction of two words. Rafu Yadayim. Rafu Yadayim is an idiom that means, literally it means, their hands were weak. Now what is that? This is an idiom, though. It's an expression. And we don't really have this expression in English. But in Hebrew, when you care about something very deeply, you hold on to it tight. Let's say your mother is carrying your baby brother across Georgia Avenue. No, she's going to hold him very, very tight. If you have something in your hand that you don't really care about, I hold it loosely, so if you drop it, it's not a big deal. And sometimes you might even forget that it's in your hand. You might be holding whatever it is, a piece of bubble gum you took out of your mouth or something, right? So for whatever reason, because you have to talk to somebody, so the bubble gum is in your, so you don't want to throw it away. But on the other hand, you're not going to make any big effort to save it. So the Or HaChaim says that when a person has an attitude of a weak hand when it comes to Torah, meaning to say, Torah doesn't excite them, it doesn't interest them, even if they keep the Torah, they keep the mitzvahs. But sometimes people do it very mechanically, without feeling. In Yiddish we say, without geschmack. Geschmack is when something is really, really tasty, right? Geschmack. And that's really a problem that, even religious Jews have very, very often. And that is, we get used to it after a while. Everything becomes habit. You dive in, you wear tefillin, you guys, in fact, it's very interesting, when a bar mitzvah boy, you're a bar mitzvah?
Yeah. I am too.
Okay, you guys already know, right? So you're the adults in the room. But when you first start putting on tefillin, it's so exciting. You've been looking at other people doing it for so long. And then you now join, you know, the gedolim of Klal Yisrael, and you put on tefillin, and it's so exciting. But what happens after 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, 50 years, you know, whatever it would be, the person gets habituated. Shabbos, such a beautiful, exciting time. But we sometimes, you know, get bored. Summer Shabbos, I can't do anything till, you know, 10 o'clock at night. So, Rafa Yadayim, weakness of the hand, is an idiom, it's an expression. That means a person may be a good Jew. He may be a good Jew. And Baruch Hashem, you know, I'll tell you what, if a person is a good Jew, even without the passion, they're doing a lot. They deserve a lot of credit. I'm not putting anyone down. I mean, but it's certainly not the highest level. The highest level is not just to mechanically do things, but it's to feel love of Hashem and feel reverence and awe for Hashem and to feel that the mitzvos are beautiful things. Right? So that's why Yisum Refidim, you have to leave the attitude of Rafu Yadayim. And by the way, Chazal say it's no accident that Amalek attacked us in a place that goes by the name Refidim, because that's a spiritual message. We become vulnerable to Amalek when we have the attitude of not caring about the mitzvos. So it's not just a place. That place signified a certain spiritual level. Okay? And you know, that's the thing, that David HaMelech prays that he wants to dwell in the house of Hashem all the days of his life. That's Shifti Beveis Hashem, Kol Yemei Chayai. And then he says, and I want to be a visitor in your temple. So the question is, well, what do you mean? You want to be in God's house all the days of your life? Mm-hmm. And you want to be a visitor? The answer is, yeah. I want to be with Hashem all the days of my life, but I want to have the excitement of the visitor. Now, I'll tell you, I'll give you a bit of a personal example, you know. My wife and I have had the great zechus of living in Eretz Yisrael, living in Yerushalayim, for 7 years, almost 7 years now. Have any of you guys been to Israel?
We're going in 2 weeks.
Oh, fantastic. Wow, wow, wow. Yeah, you've been to Eretz Yisrael?
Several times.
Wow, okay, okay. Well, you know, when you visit and you don't see it every day, it's very, very exciting. I mean, I remember myself the first time I went to Israel, how exciting it was. But what happens is, you know, you live in a place, you know, you get used to it, you take it for granted, you complain, right? So David HaMelech is praying that although he wants to be in the house of Hashem all of his life, he wants to have the passion and the excitement of the visitor that's not there all the time, because you take things for granted, right? That's a bad thing. I'm giving myself Musar. That we take things for granted, that we shouldn't. In fact, we sometimes even look at them negatively, which of course we should not, because what a wonderful thing it is. So that's step one. You got to leave Refidim, meaning not just leave a place, leave an attitude. Okay. Second step, go to the Midbar. So here, the Orach Chaim says, a Midbar, a desert, is known. I mean, one of the things that's very beautiful about the desert, and people will tell you this, is the emptiness of the desert. You know, cities are beautiful in their own way too, but cities are filled with things, buildings and cars and trucks and all sorts of people moving around. Part of the beauty of the desert is the stillness of the desert. It's the quietness. It's the emptiness of the desert. So step number two, the Orach Chaim says, is we have to try to simplify our lives and not get so involved in getting stuff. Now, this is a bit difficult and a bit nuanced, because obviously Hashem does not want us to deliberately be poor. Hashem expects that, you know, we should try to make a living, take care of our families, have a nice home. And all of those are good. Nobody's telling you become a hermit and, you know, wear rags and sleep on nails. There might be other religions that do those things, in an extreme case. But now Judaism does not do that. Judaism says, you know, enjoy the world. But one of the difficult messages that you got to pick up in life is that you can't make getting things the main goal of your life. More money, more houses, more cars, more stuff. Because the same way that, you know, if you kind of eat junk food, you're not going to appreciate a slow-cooked meal because you always want instant gratification. So in life, you know, when you get stuff, you get this instant high. I have another thing, another thing, another thing. In learning Torah, maybe this is the bad news, you don't always get an instant high. Meaning sometimes, you know, it's not so exciting, it doesn't look so interesting. But over time, it moves you, it makes you a better person. It brings you closer to Hashem. But the problem is, when you're addicted to the instant gratification, you're not going to be willing to put in the time for the slower things that are actually much more meaningful. In fact, by the way, this is true even outside of religion. They say now that because of the internet, which teaches everybody web surfing, and I'm sure all of you do web surfing and the like, the kids in school have difficulty reading a book. Because in web surfing, as you know, you're always jumping from thing to thing to thing to thing to thing. There are benefits to that. You get information very quickly. But you never stay with something to concentrate on it. Because you're used to getting instant facts as opposed to thinking about things. So even in the secular world, there are actually educators who say that the internet has... on one hand, it's given us access to all sorts of things, some of which are good, indeed, some of which are not. But one of the negative aspects of the internet, from an educational standpoint, this is not even a Jewish thing, is that it has impaired powers and abilities of concentration. I don't know if you've noticed that or you've discussed it with your parents, but it's not something to think about. If I'm jumping around too much. Channel, right? 500 channels on TV. I'll take a lower tech example. 500 channels on TV, right? So what do people do when they have 500 channels on TV? They're sitting and the whole, they can't even watch a half an hour TV show. The whole thing is going, you know, what's there? Channel surfing, right? That comes from an inability to focus. So the Aruch Hayim says that the second step, make yourself like a desert, means don't get so involved in getting more and more stuff. Simplify your life to the basics. And when you simplify your life, you're less cluttered, you're less edgy, you're less fragmented, and then you're able to focus. Okay, that is the meaning. They came to the desert. Now, the third thing seems to be a repeat. They encamped in the desert. Now, in other words, it says desert twice, right? Vayavo midbar, vayachanu midbar. So what is step three? So here the Aruch Hayim says, there is another aspect of the desert. Because the desert is so empty, it represents humility. Because when a person is conceited, right? You know the Hebrew word for a person that's, he boasts, he's arrogant, he's conceited. You're close, yeah. So you heard the word, yeah. Well, Gneva means, it's actually an interesting pun. Gneva means a thief. Hmm. But you're right, the person is overly prideful. The Ramban actually writes, he's stealing that from God. Only God has the right to have some measure of gaiva. Yeah, but gaiva, or we say in Yiddish, we often pronounce it gaiva. So a baal gaiva, or baal gaiva, as we say in the Yeshiva world, means a person that is arrogant and conceited. And the opposite of a baal gava, what do we call a person that's humble and
baal humble.
Baal humble, okay, that's, I'll accept that. But we call them anav, ayin nun vav. And who is considered to be the greatest anav, the most modest person in who ever lived?
Moshe.
Pretty amazing. Moshe was certainly up there, perhaps the greatest person who ever lived. Again, it's hard to rank with the others, you know, we can't automatically rank people that way. but he was certainly among the greatest who ever lived and ever will live. And yet, he was the most humble. Right? That's such an amazing thing. Because he understood what Hashem was. And therefore, how could I be arrogant compared to Hashem? So, the Aruch Chaim says, the second mention of Midbar is referring to not being filled with yourself. And that's Anav. Okay, so you understand so far? I mentioned three things so far from the Aruch Chaim. The first one is leave complacency and lack of passion and embrace the Torah with fire. That's leave Rafidim. The second is simplify your life and don't be so connected to possessions and stuff. And the third is to be like a desert, to be humble and not arrogant. And the reason that's important is because when you're humble, you're always willing to learn from everybody. You know, if you think you're great, let's say I think I'm so great, right? So you say something, I'm not going to pay attention to what you have to say, you know, you're a nobody, right? But you might be saying something very, very good and very important. Pirkei Avos says, who is a wise person? A person who learns from everybody. Everybody. So only a modest person can learn from everybody, because he doesn't look at himself as better than other people. And if you're a Baal Gaiva, you don't even learn from Hashem. You think, hey, who's Hashem? Tell me what's the difference. As crazy and stupid as that is. So that's the third level. Got to be humble. In fact, this is the part of the famous teaching of the Gemara that Torah is compared to water. Torah is compared to water. Now, why is Torah compared to water? Now, there are a lot of reasons. You know, water is necessary for life. So Torah is necessary for life, right? We know that. Water cleans and purifies, and the Torah cleans and purifies. But one of the reasons is that water, as a liquid, is subject to gravity. Water always leaves the higher ground to go to the lower level. So too, the Torah leaves people who are arrogant and boastful, and the Torah goes to those who are humble. Right? That's the idea. And that's that third level. Be like a desert that's not filled up, in this case, with itself, as it were. Now, the fourth step is actually one thing that Rashi himself addresses. Vayichan Sham Yisrael Neged Ahor, and the Jewish people encamped next to the mountain. Now, it already says they encamped in the desert. Now, you don't have the pasuk in front of you, so you may not notice this. But in addition to why is the verb camping repeated twice, there's another problem as well. Are you familiar in Hebrew with the difference between Lashon Yachid and Lashon Rabim?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what's Lashon Yachid? What's Lashon Rabim?
Once Yachid is singular, Rabim is plural.
Right, so this is different than English. In English, a verb usually is the same whether the subject is plural or singular. So for example, if I say he took the book off the table, or they took the book off the table, took is going to be the same, T-O-O-K. But in Hebrew, if I say who means he, who lakach es ha-sefer, me'al ha-shulchan, he took the book from the table. You'll notice the word is lokach. If I say they took the book, heim is they, lakchu. So this is an interesting point. It's good to pay attention to the fact that Hebrew is not just a different language, but there are different linguistics, there are different language structures. Meaning things that you don't have in English will be in Hebrew. Of course, this is not unique to Hebrew. Many, many, many European languages have a difference in verbs. English happens not to have that difference. Okay, but be it as it may, you got a problem here, because the first time it says they encamped, it says they encamped. Vayachanu. Yachanu is plural. Okay, a lot of people encamped, so that's fine. But then, at the end, it says, Vayichan. Israel encamped. Now, in English, you would not know the difference. But the Hebrew, Vayichan, is Lashon Yachid. Now, you can have it either way, because you can refer to a nation by a plural, because it's a lot of people, or you could say it's one nation and call it singular. Either way is good, but how do you, but switching from one to the other is going to be a problem. Like, why switch? So here the Aruch Chaim says what Rashi already said before, and that is, the singular verb teaches me, in order to receive God's Torah, we have to be unified. Ish echad, like one person. Lev echad, one heart. We cannot receive Hashem's Torah unless we are one people. We love each other, we care about each other. So now we have a beautiful four-step plan. Leave complacency and indifference and become enthusiastic about mitzvot. That's refidim. The second, simplify your life and don't focus too much on possessions and stuff so you can concentrate. Three, be humble so you can learn from other people. And four, develop within yourself love and care for your fellow Jew. Ish echad uvalev echad. So, those are the four steps. Of course, it's a lot easier to say than it is to do. That's true. But, four simple steps. Do them, and you have received Hashem's Torah. Now, do you remember in the Pesach Haggadah, right? So everybody remembers the song Dayenu. Right? Most people sing it, probably all sing Dayenu. So Dayenu talks about if Hashem would have done this thing and not that thing, that would have been enough to be grateful for. And how much more I'm grateful because Hashem did all of these extra things. So a lot of the Dayenus are a problem. I'm not going to go over each one that's a problem. Like it says, oh, if you would have split the Red Sea but not take us across dry land, Dayenu. What does that mean? It splits the Red Sea, then he closes it on us? Is that Dayenu? Okay. But one of the Dayenus, that's a problem, it says the following. If you would have brought us to Mount Sinai, and you wouldn't give us the Torah, Dayenu, that's enough. What's so great about coming to Mount Sinai and not getting the Torah? Like, what's the point? What would Mount Sinai have been if God wouldn't have given us the Torah? So one of the commentaries says that at Mount Sinai, even before we got the Ten Commandments, we became ish echad, we became like one person and one heart. So that's such a wonderful thing, that even if we wouldn't have gotten the Torah afterwards, that would be so much to be grateful for. You know that the first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed on the 9th of Av, Tisha B'Av, and the second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed on the 9th of Av, 490 years later, on the exact same day. And the Talmud says, the Gemara says, that the first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed because the Jewish people did the worst of Eros. Like, what are the worst of Eros?
Killing.
They did killing, was one of them, and they committed adultery. They were with other people's wives, and they even worshipped idols, Avodah Zarah. The worst of Eros. Those are the only three of Eros where you have to give your life before you. If it's the Shabbos, if my life is in danger, I'm supposed to violate the Shabbos. It's not even a violation. But the three of Eros, I have to allow myself to be killed before I transgress, are Avodah Zarah, idol worship, Gilui Arayos, the improper relations of men and women, and murder. Okay, that was the first Beis HaMikdash. Yeah.
So if soldiers in battle didn't kill each other, if that's, they're kind of forced to kill them,
that's different. That's different because that's mm-hmm. that one is if the other person's going to kill you, you're allowed to kill them, but as well you're defending people.
Yeah, that's correct. When the Ten Commandments says, "Thou shalt not," actually it says, "Shall not murder." It doesn't even say, "Thou shalt not kill." So murder is defined as killing people when there's no Torah justification. There are going to be cases, Baruch Hashem, not that many, but there are going to be cases where the Torah commands you, not just permits you, even commands you, to kill the person that's trying to kill you or kill your nation, and therefore a war that is fought to protect the Jewish people or protect the land of Israel, that killing is permissible.
And how come it says in some of the later parashas or something in Devarim, it says like they like take over, when they're like taking over some like, cities, they like take over and they like have to explain about how they killed every last person in the city. There wasn't.
No, those are not easy commandments to understand. But those are, I'll leave it to your rabbi to explain them for you.
Thank you.
No, those are real good questions. But again, you do have to understand that these nations, which are all extinct today, they're not around today, were very, very evil nations. And they would cause, number one, they would want to physically destroy us, and they would take us away from Hashem in many, many ways. It would be like killing the Nazis, right? Like you kill Nazis because, you know, we don't like to kill, but these are people that are evil, and they will try to destroy as many people as they could. So God said that they needed to be removed. But even then, I want to tell you, even then, Maimonides, the Rambam writes, that if those nations wanted to accept, they didn't have to become Jewish, if they would accept the basic laws that God gave to Noah. You ever hear about the seven laws of Noah? Like the basic laws of morality, we would allow them to stay alive. So it's not totally as simple as you would think. Okay, so that's the first temple. Now, the second temple...
For idol worship, what about the idols?
You're 100% right. That was a tremendous avera. They should have... You're right, 100%. The halacha is you're not allowed to do it. They committed a great sin. But here's the thing. The second temple, the Jewish people were keeping the commandments. So what sin caused gave the Romans the power to destroy the second temple? Do you remember?
Did they?
That was part of it.
That was part of it. But the main part was they were being bad friends.
That's right. They had, and the phrase was, sinas chinam, hatred, polarization, division, machlokas, right? You know all these words, machlokas, argument. Now, listen to what the Gemara says. The first temple was destroyed for the worst sins, but how long was it destroyed till it got rebuilt? Only 70 years. 70 years. So for the worst sins, we lost the temple for 70 years, and then we got it back. But for the sin of sinas chinam, we lost it, and it's been almost 2,000 years, and we still don't have it back. What year do you? What year did the Romans destroy the second temple? In the secular year, this is 2017, right?
Mm-hmm.
The temple was destroyed in the secular year 70. 70. So, you can figure it out. How many years have passed? So it's simply 2017 minus 70. Right? So it's not 2,000 years, but it's close to 2,000 years. Okay.
1,937.
Okay, you guys are good at math. Okay, that's
get good at math.
You are good at math. Okay.
Good.
Oh yeah, 47.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, so now we have the official tally. But the point is, again, first temple, destruction was only 70 years. Second temple, did you say 1,947? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you see how bad sinas chinam is, right? And that is why the last step here is that you have to be together. We have to be unified. And this is something that, you know, you see, the Jewish people were a very small people. But we have so many, many divisions. I don't mean only between religious and not religious, but between conservative, reform, and orthodox. And then within orthodox, you have Hasidim and non-Hasidim. And then within Hasidim, you have 200 different groups. Now, having different groups is actually very nice, because God doesn't want everybody to be the same. But when the groups fight and denigrate and insult and don't talk to each other, then it becomes a bad thing. Then it becomes what's called sinas chinam. Okay? So these are this is the thought I wanted to share with you. And it's very much of a pleasure. And I wish you a lot of haslacha. Okay? Do you like your other religions down here? Do you like your school?
I do, yeah.
You do? Okay. Now, how long have you been studying here? Is this the first year?
This is my first year.
In other words, the whole school is only one. The boy, I know the girls' division. I know it's been around for a while, but this is the first year of the boys' division.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Hashem. So it's a real pleasure. I want to wish you all much bracha, much hatzlacha.
Can we just take a
fast? Sure.
It's the same.
Okay. Just sit. Okay.
Then we'll take a